My name's Adele Onyango, and welcome to another episode of Legally Clueless. No, seriously, I have no clue what I'm doing, but I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. Hey you, welcome to episode 216 of Legally Clueless. Thank you so much for rocking with this podcast, especially if you are an OG member of the family. I've got so much love for you. And if this is your first time listening to this podcast, welcome to the family. Audio episodes like this go out every single Monday, and you can stream them on Spotify or everywhere else you find podcasts on. Make sure you check out our website, which is legallycluelessafrica.com. There's a link to it in the show notes. While there, you can watch our tour series, our video series, and sign up to join our community and stay informed of when our events are coming up. Ooh, and if you want to share your story on this podcast, if you're African, you've got a valid story, we want to hear it wherever you are in this beautiful world of ours. All you have to do is in the show notes, fill out the storyteller form, and we will get back to you. We do recordings virtually as well, so literally, doesn't matter where in the globe you are, we will find you. It sounds a bit stalkerish when I say like, we'll find you in a good way, all right? And the last thing, join our cozy corner of the internet on Instagram. We're at Legally Clueless Africa. I think I'm going to slow down on Twitter just because there's so much anger there. And I'm just like, I just want soft things, only soft things for a bit. So yeah, join our Instagram page, we're Legally Clueless Africa, and shout out to everybody who's part of that family and just showing us so much love over there. I really do appreciate you. So I'm really excited about this episode because it is coming out on the 1st of May. Yes, Labor Day is a thing, but what we're focused on here is that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So it's great to have this storyteller on the podcast.
In my mind, I was like, so we've closed school. See, the next thing that comes after this is Christmas. In my mind, I'm like, okay, so my family is coming to see me and I need to prepare a feast, a Kenyan feast. Made all the food that I had in the house. So one day I was making a feast, and then the next day, I don't know, there was just a blackout and I woke up in hospital. The feast was all in my head. No one said they were coming.
That is Noella. Her story is coming up a little later in this episode. It's just great to have her on here to start off May with her, because her story is on mental health, mental illnesses, and her journey to diagnosis. But before we get to the story, song of the week. I've been replaying this guy for like the entire week because his new album is going to be out on the 5th of May, and I just can't wait because I think he's such a talented artist. I hope to see him live one day. He's from South Africa. I'm pretty sure I've shared a couple of his songs on this podcast before. His name is Bongiziwe Mabandla, and I just think he's just such a talented artist. And so the song I want you to check out is called Zange. To our South African fam who understand the particular language he's singing in, because I'm not even sure which South African language it is, feel free to share what it's about. I'm just here vibing. But isn't that the power of music? There's just an energy it has with it. And I was thinking about it this past week, because I was listening to a lot of African music and Afro jazz, and I was just feeling like there's a spiritualness about music that's quite interesting. It is there in almost all art forms, if you ask me. But I was thinking about music, I was thinking about drums and beats and how you automatically connect with it. It's quite magical, if you ask me, but yeah, check out the song. I've gone on a tangent. Wow. Check out the song. It's called Zange by Bongiziwe. I've put a link to it in the show notes. All right. So before we jump into 100 African stories, I just want to share the high that I'm on. It has nothing to do with drugs. So yesterday we had our Legally Clueless Africa group therapy session. And it's our second one. It was just so powerful, so spiritual. And I'm just so inspired by every single person who came, because I think deciding to intentionally heal is such an act of courage. I love clapping for even the people in my close circle. Whenever they take a step towards that, I'm just like, celebrating almost like it's their birthday. So I just felt so inspired by everybody who came. And I wanted to share a few take homes, maybe like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There are many. Okay, so let me breeze through them. So what we were talking about mainly in the group therapy session was how we lose our essential selves in our childhood as per our family dynamics and even, let's say, school. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about when I say essential selves, if you go an episode back, I think episode 214, I had a conversation with my therapist, Faith, who actually leads the group therapy sessions, and she talks about essential self versus social self. So just so that you're not floating. Anyway, so some of the things that came up that I want to share, number one is like boundaries in families. And one of the things Faith highlighted that so many people kind of recognize, and even I recognize in my own journey and my own life, and I hadn't really sat down with it, was boundaries in terms of like your parents or your primary caregivers sharing stories about you to, say, your aunties or your uncles, to like external family members, or even to your siblings, and how that makes you feel. And I hadn't recognized that one of the things I resent about someone in my family is kind of like being in bed and she's seated at the foot of my bed speaking to another aunt about me, and they think I'm asleep, and she's saying the most unfair things about me, and I still remember it. Isn't that hectic? Like, I must have been about maybe 12, but she was saying the most horrible things about me, and then the next day kind of like smiling like everything is okay. And I still remember having that inner confusion of like, sis, you know, I heard you, but obviously you're a kid, you can't. I couldn't confront her. And just kind of, when that came up yesterday, I thought about even my relationship with one of my nieces and just thinking, if our relationship ever grows to the point where I'm her confidant or we have a space where she can tell me things, I need to be absolutely careful in honoring the boundaries and even how I speak about her to others. That was one thing that I was like, ooh, I didn't actually think about that and process the moments where it happened in my childhood and I felt uncomfortable. The other thing is when you're building boundaries, and this is not only specific to families, but it came out in therapy because we were talking about boundaries with family, that it's normal to initially feel guilt or lonely as you start building healthy boundaries, but with time these feelings do fade off. And I remember any boundary work that I've done initially feeling like I'm a bad person, and the guilt gets very heavy, and you can kind of backtrack, especially if you are a people pleaser. I'm a recovering people pleaser. You can get drowned in that guilt, but it does wear off, and you start to, the more you do the work, understand that it's a healthy thing. You know, it's not a mean or asshole thing to do. That's two. Number three, when you start to build these boundaries, it is not advisable to like sit, you know, in the group therapy session, we're talking about family. So like to sit your family down and share, oh, from now on, blah, 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 blah. You know, what came out is just start enforcing the boundaries through your behavior. And I think I talked about this in the boundaries episode as well. And it came out in yesterday's group therapy session. And sometimes, you know, down the line, if a boundary is crossed and you find yourself having to communicate the boundary verbally, it doesn't have to be a fight or it doesn't have to be aggressive. You can choose to not show up for every fight that you're invited for. Yeah. And just stick to your boundaries. It's difficult at first, but it births a very healthier version of you, which means you can be able to show up to your various relationships in a more healthy manner. Oh, another thing that came out yesterday that I was like, whoo, my goodness, especially y'all who have kids. Wounded children become wounded parents who then wound their kids. Oh my goodness, when Faith said that, it really, that statement helps you understand some things your parents may have done, you know, maybe based on their upbringing and unresolved trauma, because trauma just if it's unresolved, it just sits in you, both physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. It's there. You can't wish it away. It will always be there. It'll manifest in your habits, in your words, in your physical feeling. It is there. Right? And so our wounded parents were wounded children, and because it was unresolved, they then passed on those wounds to their kids. So it helps you understand some things your parents may have done, but also makes you very aware that if you are not careful, you could continue these harmful habits and wound your kids. So where does the cycle stop? Are you going to be courageous enough to ensure the cycle stops with you? And the last thing that came up was around forgiveness and apologies. Some family members will just never apologize to you. That's just how it is. And I remember I have an aunt who I have a very strained relationship with. And there was once I kind of forced an apology out of her. And I thought it would make me feel better for some things that she said, which I will actually get into when I finally give you the episode on hyper-independence. But, you know, the apology when it finally came out, because when I say I forced it, I did force it out of her. It just wasn't real. Yeah, it just wasn't real. But I thought about that incident yesterday in the group therapy session, because what came up was, one, some family members who have hurt you will never apologize to you. And so you need to figure out, how do you heal knowing there's no apology coming? This is not only limited to family. It's across the board. There are people who have hurt you that there will be no apology coming your way. And another thing that came out was that apologies and forgiveness need to be specific. They cannot be blanket apologies and blanket forgiveness. And you know, a lot of older family members are known for this, just to kind of like, okay, I'm sorry for it all or whatever. These apologies need to be very specific. What are you apologizing for? And when they apologize on your end, what are you forgiving for? It was just such a magical experience, and my sincere love just goes out to everybody who came. And the next group therapy session is probably going to be in June, so do sign up to join our community so that you can get a heads up first when the next therapy session is. And yeah, oh, I'm still on a high from it. It was just so wonderful. So we need to jump into 100 African Stories. So I first saw Noella at a Legally Clueless Africa Digital Content Workshop last year. Yes. And, you know, she came in and I had no idea what project she was working on. I think the participants were about 20 or 25. Anyway, the next time I saw her was when a friend sent me a video of her film that's titled What's Eating My Mind. It's on the BBC Africa YouTube channel, and there's a link to it in the show notes. But I think you should listen to her story first before you watch it. And the film follows her over a couple of years through a diagnosis of a mental illness that changed her life. She is just so amazing. Her energy is right, and I'm so thankful for the work she's doing in championing much needed change when it comes to all round mental health. I couldn't think of a better story to kick off Mental Health Awareness Month with than Noella's.
100 African Stories on Legally Clueless, stories from Africa.
I'm Noella from Nairobi, Kenya. My parents are originally from Kitui, and I come from a tribe. Our clan is called Mbakanya, which means people who love meat. And I definitely love meat. So my childhood was, I feel like my childhood was a highlight reel, because I am the only girl. I have two elder brothers. And growing up, like I said, it's a highlight reel, because I always remember having parties either at our house or going to my uncle's or my grandfather's place and having parties. So it was always about celebration. And that really stood out for me, because my mom particularly was keen on having my brothers and I experience other cultures. Because I remember even during when I was in primary school, she used to bring us, she was a teacher, a primary school teacher. So she'd bring us Diwali sweets. She was a teacher in Ngara, and also we'd have crisps. And then also went to a public primary school where we had party days at the end of the term, had a lot of road trips. Like every end of term, we'd have a road trip outside of Nairobi. And if we don't have that with school, she'd always take us to Mombasa, and my brothers would go to Christian camp. At the time, I was very young, so I couldn't qualify to Christian camp in Diani. So like we'd go around to Kunda, Diani, Mombasa, just learning about the different places. And I remember as early as 9 years old, I was able to take a matatu to school and back and was very curious. So like in my 20s, I was the kind of person who would be like, oh, hey, I'm going to Naivasha for 4 days. Then my family was like, okay, cool. Because it was something like I was already exposed to, and it wasn't like they weren't like, who is she going with? It was, they just trusted my judgment. And I feel like that's where I get my sense of curiosity as a storyteller. I do stories that sometimes people don't see the vision while I'm pitching it. But I love that sense of curiosity and that sense of adventure, especially with how I do things in my life. I was a quiet child growing up, but I was very, I was very observant. And I think I also, that also helped me like store a lot of good core fun memories. So for me, like I remember very early on, my dad and mom taking us to, I think it was 20th Century at the time, which was very, I was very young. But I remember the smell of popcorn. I remember watching Michael Jackson's Thriller. So for me, that's a core memory because I was introduced to storytelling and the fun of it. And because my dad did buy us popcorn, so these days, what I usually do is I'd go to the cinema in the middle of the week. Probably there's no one else in the cinema. Buy myself popcorn or probably sneak it in for the Kenyan that I am, and then just watch a movie. So I feel like that created my sense of wonder, and it also created like my curiosity about things, you know, because I was always curious, like, how do these people do this? Like, yes, we're watching Thriller. I remember Michael Jackson dancing to it and like the different elements. It was a scary part, but somehow as kids we were there. So I don't know how we made it into the theater. So, I mean, that I feel like also build up my curiosity alongside the travel experiences that my mom was keen on us having, the schools she purposed for my brothers and I to go to where we'd experience different cultures. I realized that something was wrong. Honestly, it didn't come from me, from like me realizing it. It came from other people. So I've always loved to tell stories. And so I got this opportunity to go to the US to study film. And I was excited. I was in the first semester, did really well with it. Also got to work at the school's production company. So I was like, things are aligning, things are doing well. But it was a foreign land. It wasn't home. And it was interesting because I was used to traveling within Kenya. And I was like this person who wakes up and goes, like, decides I want to go to Nakuru today. And I travel with my friends just for the curiosity, just to find out what it is about. So here I am in grad school, having finished my first semester. And I was always online because of missing home. So if I was not talking to my family, I was talking to my friends back here in Kenya. So from their side of story, they felt like there's a time I really had long conversations. And there's no way that they could stop me. So they felt like, maybe it's just that loneliness of being away from home. And when I went to grad school in the US, I went in fall. So by the end of the semester, we were gearing towards winter. And I don't do well in cold weather. So my body is adjusting to this new place. All the excitement has gone down because, okay, fine, I have, like, I'm here, so what next? And then I remember one of the long conversations I had with my family, because they'd call probably on a Sunday or a Saturday, and, like, everyone in the house would be given the phone to talk to me. Like, I remember I spoke, okay, they told me that I kept speaking, and, like, I wouldn't let anyone speak. And after that conversation, like, I was like, in my mind, I was like, oh, so we've closed school. See, the next thing that comes after this is Christmas. And as Kenyans, we are very curious. We are very excited about festivities and Christmas in particular. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, so my family is coming to see me and I need to prepare a feast, a Kenyan feast, because the holidays are here. And remember growing up, like holidays, and I mean, having parties was a thing. And then I went to my pantry, I went to the fridge, took out everything that I had, my Kenyan spices, unga, flour, I mean, wheat flour. I know I didn't cook chapati, maize meal, flour, and then made all the food that I had in the house. And then the thing that I remember after making that meal was, by the way, after these guys eat all this food, so you know what, they'll need something to take it down with. So I was like, maybe I should make Kenyan tea as well. So I went to the fridge, took a whole gallon. Okay, that thing pained me. A whole gallon of milk. I didn't have a sieve for the tea leaves. So I went to one of my housemaids' stash of utensils. And then it was so tiny. I think it was for coffee or something. So I was trying to strain this whole gallon of milk with this strainer, but I was like, it's like for a good cause, you know, I'm hosting my people. And then, so one day I was making a feast, and then the next day, I don't know, there was just there's a blackout, and I woke up in hospital. The feast was all in my head. No one said they were coming, but for me, I felt like they were. Because this is what we do as a family. And also at the time I lived in a house where I had other roommates as well. But they already had their own plans for Christmas, and we weren't close then because it was the first semester. And of course you can't like you can't be like, oh hey, can I come to your family? And like, you know, like it was that feeling of, I feel like it was also like it dawned on me subconsciously that I was going to be alone for the first time during a very big thing, that all my family members come together. I mean, I love the sense of community we have here in Kenya, and I feel like it's also within Africa. And there it's like, okay, you're very independent, you make decisions on your own. And I feel like that's why I was online a lot, because like you also feel that sense of you need to have your own tribe. Yeah. And it was also one of those, I feel like no one prepares you for that. Like when you go abroad for the first time, no one prepares you. Hey, you know what? You're going to get lonely. No one prepares you for that. And I feel like that's why we hold on to, like, for example, the Kenyan bracelet. You hold on to, you go to Maasai Market and buy all like the things that will remind you of home. Like for me, I carried a lot of Kenyan spices because I was like, I don't know how that food there tastes, but at least if I can have my karoiko, my pilau masala, my tea leaves, it will give me a sense of home. And then it's also, for me, I was also looking at it like it's an exchange of culture. Like, for example, for my roommates, I remember at some point making them like a Kenyan meal, you know, but you're like, hey, here, everyone is on their own. So you just go with the program. So I wake up in hospital. And I see this white room. You know, actually thought, what do you have in heaven? It was so weird because I was like, and then the background, because for me, I remember a lot of things by smell or sound. So I remember there was a prompt that was in the room that I was in. It was like, your wellness matters. I'm like, who's talking? But it was, and then like I was, it was a small room. That had a bed, and then it's all white. And then they had put like on I think the table besides me, they had put some food there. So there's water and like food there. But I was like, where am I? You know, like that. And then I feel like also it was like that curiosity that I had as a child. Where am I? Is this heaven? Is like, who's this speaking? Why are they telling me things about like my wellness? And it was at some point that voice became irritating because I feel like it was on, like it was like a pre-recorded thing that kept telling me about, but they're not telling me where I am. Yeah, so I got up from the bed and then I went to, I think the reception was close. And then I was like, what am I doing here? They're like, you just go back where you are. Like, and then I think I transitioned because during my first stay in hospital, there were a lot of blackouts. There were a lot of points that I couldn't remember. but also tracing it back with like my family. Because I was in film school, I had a film partner. So apparently between the time when I made the meal and when I was in hospital, I was missing. And my family is the one that was able to know that because I was not online. It was very unlike me. So it was them going to my socials and looking at, you know, like the tags you have with your classmates. So like, this, my film partner was called Meg. She was like, Meg, like, looks like they were friends. So can we like send her a message and ask her where Noella is? She also did not know where I was because we had already closed school. So it was a search, like, let's look for her. And they found out that I was in hospital. But they found out that because in my core memory, I knew my name. I knew my dad's number of head. I knew, like, so like they were able to trace with that. So when I was making the meal, it was a series of events that happened leading me going up to hospital. So in between all the things that were happening, me imagining that my family is coming to see me, something in my head just snapped and I was like, oh, you need to run and run now. And I was like, if I run, I need to do it smartly. So I need to have like a change of clothes, which was there when I went to hospital. And I need to spray a bit of car perfume so that like I don't seem like a random person who's running. But like in my head, I was running towards the school. I lived outside the school, but it was a walking distance. So in my head, I was like, I need to make it convincing, like carry a bag. I don't know where I was going. I think in hindsight, I was going home to Kenya. That sense of family, that sense of this is time for us to be together. So the bag was clothes preparing me for where I was going. The perfume was so that when somebody meets me, it's not this random chick who smells weird. And then I ran towards the school and was in a panic mode. So luckily, like the school police was there. I think they are the ones who took me to hospital. So when I go to hospital, it's like, okay, I think after I wake up in this white room, which just had space for one bed and a table, which had like water and some food, they transitioned me into like now the general place where other people are also hospitalized. And we're a mix of both men and female. But it doesn't make sense to me because I'm like, okay, I'm here. Yes, the morning you wake up, I remember in the morning I would wake up every single day, make my bed, take a shower and prepare to leave. Because I'm leaving, I'm coming back home. And I'm seeing other people there. And I didn't see myself like I was sick or any. I didn't see myself. I didn't know what was happening. And even the engagements with the doctors, nobody told me anything. I feel like it was more about observing me. But because I was able to remember my dad's number off head and who I was, like my name and like where the school I was doing grad school. So that also helped because every single day I'd have at least three people calling me. So I was like, which is like I don't know I don't know why I'm here. No one is telling me anything. And then I remember having a conversation with one of the doctors, and they're like, oh, we're gonna put you on lithium. I'm like, what? My chemistry is like lithium is a dangerous thing. So why do you want me to take lithium? I was so resistant on that, and I was like, nope, that's not gonna happen. Why are you giving me that? Because you see, they did not tell me why I was there. They did not tell me my diagnosis. And for me, it was trying to figure out like what's happening. And because I did not see myself, I was like, let me just hang out with these people here. Because I'm here anyway. Let me just hang out with these other patients. So I was the one who was like, don't worry, you go home. Your family will be there when you go back. I was that kind of patient because like I had to make the most of the situation. And then also it didn't make sense to me what kind of hospital it was because I guess because of the culture And, you know, like we, like every morning we'd make like a request of what we'd eat throughout the day. And then there was option of junk food. I was like, is this a hospital? Really? Like things didn't add up. Things did not add up. And then I remember the feast that I made. So it hit me one of the days, you know, I've made a lot of food and it's going to go bad. Because I've had milk. Me, I can't waste money like that. So I go to one of the nurses, and then I'm like, oh, hi, excuse me. So I don't know whether you can make, we can figure a way of how to get someone to the house that I live. It's near campus, and like there's food there. So like you can probably give out to people who need the food, because man, it doesn't make sense for it to go wrong, to go bad. And I was dismissed. I was like, just go back there. Go back there and like do whatever you are doing there. I was like, what do you mean? Like that food is gonna go bad. I can't waste that money. Like, anyway, that was, I mean, and I actually did not know also that I was in a psych ward, because movies lie for sure. It, nothing that I had seen in movies reflected my experience in a psych ward. So for me, nothing made sense. So I, you know, when you're in a psych ward, you kind of have to learn how to survive, and you talk with other patients. So it was like you have to show like there's some sort of improvement. And then when I was released, I was like, okay, so here's your medication. Make sure you take this XYZ times. So I leave hospital. And then because nobody told me my diagnosis and what it meant, when I took the medication, it was too strong for me. I remember like I would barely walk a few steps when I took one of the medication, and like I was very groggy. I was like, there's something here that's not adding up. And then because of that shift, that sudden shift with that strong medication, I withdrew. I stopped taking it. And that was the worst like decision, because it triggered another relapse. And then when I went back to hospital, I was worse than the first time, because my body is trying to adjust to me withdrawing suddenly. And they have to put you on heavier medication when you get hospitalized. So it, like, there were so many changes happening to my body I didn't understand. So like the second time when I went to hospital, I was more withdrawn. I didn't like speak to, like, I was like, it was like a totally different person from the first time. And then I remember the second time I spent Christmas in hospital. So that was like, there was so much. And then even like when I was speaking to family at home, it was like, oh, niko tu sawa. Leo tumefanya hivi. Like it was, you know, like certain, you're prompting someone to speak, and they can feel like she's getting worse, but you know, like no one could come all the way. And there are so many uncertainties. And eventually, like after Christmas, I remember getting discharged. My film partner, she's called Meg, who like was able to contact my family and tell them the progress, should come and see me. And when I was discharged, like after Christmas, I remember when going home, I was like, Meg, can I come and stay with you? So yeah, she came for me, and I spent at least New Year's with her, but I was very withdrawn. Very withdrawn. The medication like was also trying to adjust to it. So for me, I felt like I need to be part of a community. And that was a decision for me to come back to Kenya.
Catch more African stories in the next episode of Legally Clueless.
That is part one of Noella's story. Part two will be out next week in episode 217. In the show notes, I've put links to where you can connect with Noella and where you can watch her film. And I urge you to do that. And then after you've watched it, I urge you to share it across all your networks, especially seeing as how May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So just make sure you do that. And then even away from the more technical aspects of mental health, when we're talking about actual illnesses, healthcare, access to different medical interventions, etc. Even just away from that, I think sometimes with such issues, it can become overwhelming, where you feel like you know the problem, but you don't have the capacity to change anything. I think step one is treating every single person you encounter with grace and with kindness first. Before you hear their story, before you know who they are. Sometimes you might not ever get to know their story because it could be someone you're interacting with on a very basic or quick level. I just feel like what's happening, there's a lot happening in the world first and foremost, but there's an absence of kindness that I think goes a long way. There's an absence of grace. And so perhaps the first step before you start educating yourself on mental health, on practices that can help you, on better diet, better lifestyle decisions, in your relations with other people, be it people you interact with often or even strangers, I think we just need to bring back kindness and grace. But okay, part two will be out next week. But in the meantime, remember that you can head over to legallycluelessafrica.com to sign up to join our community. And if you are in Kenya, you can catch us on Trace FM every Monday and Wednesday at 1 p.m. and 11 p.m. Every Friday at 1 p.m., just go to traceradio.co.ke and stream Trace there. I'm sending you so much, yes, kindness and grace, those things that are missing in the world. I'm going to send those your way and leave you with this, what you can expect in next week's episode.
Unfortunately, even when I came back home, I did not know my diagnosis. They did full body checks. So I was like, okay, everything else is fine, but you have unspecified bipolar. And that didn't mean anything to me because I did not know what that was. Luckily, my dad, ni wanako by gazeti. So this was I was diagnosed in 2016. And then early 2017, I came back home to Kenya. At the time, my dad had seen like a newspaper. There was a story that someone had shared. And part of her story was that she was bipolar. So there were similarities to her story and mine.
That's it for this episode of Legally Clueless. You can share this podcast with your friends. You can keep it for yourself. I'm not judging. Just make sure you're here next week for the next episode.